So thank you for taking the time today to allow me to tell you about a recent project of mine that involves trading, modeling the trade-off between treating chlamydia with either azithromycin or doxycycline, taking into account drug-specific cost, adherence, and efficacy. Mm-hmm. So let's jump right into it. Currently, CDC recommends treating chlamydia with either azithro as a single dose or doxy as 14 doses over 7 days. However, with options come factions and arguments over which drug treatment is better, hence the angry mobs with the pitchforks. And so before I proceed, can I just get a straw poll from the audience? Like, who thinks azithro in all cases, just generally? Anyone willing to raise their hand?
What was the question, better?
Azithro. Which mob are you on if you had to be on one side? Azithro.
Are you on the azithro side?
And then down. And now doxy. And so doxy is in the minority here. So let's review the evidence from the point of view from each side of the angry mob. Roughly 20 years ago in the 90s, azithro was much more expensive than a full course of doxycycline. But recently, azithro has gone generic on the market. It is cheaper. It is cheaper than a full course of doxy by roughly two to three times. So in terms of cost alone, now it seems that azithro is favored in this one dimension. Moving to drug efficacy, a study from a few years ago found higher efficacy for doxy, roughly 95% efficacy, compared to only 77% efficacy for azithro. And so I'll mention that if you just take one minus these failure rates correspond to the highest failure rates from Dr. Golden's presentation, I believe, from the rectal. But we're talking about urogenital treatment in women, but we can talk later about rectal if we want. So a more recent randomized trial found higher efficacy in both drugs, particularly for azithro. So in terms of efficacy, doxy still has the edge, but maybe not as much as we previously thought. So finally, looking at adherence to treatment. As we've already noted, azithromycin can be administered as a single point-in-time dose, and often I'm told this is done at clinical diagnosis, which has its advantages, which we saw the slide, which was very handy in the last presentation. Doxy, on the other hand, requires 14 doses over 7 days, a much more difficult treatment protocol to adhere to. So under the ideal conditions of administering doxy to individuals in a juvenile detention facility in the Geisler study, they were only able to achieve 85% adherence to treatment, roughly 85%. So thus, in reality, or even among STD clinic attendees, adherence to doxy is probably much lower than 85%, and definitely much lower than azithromycin. So the question now is, which drug to use, given these differences in cost, efficacy, and adherence? And so in particular, what level of doxycycline adherence is necessary for these drugs to have equal levels of predicted effectiveness and cost? And so this is just saying that in words. And so how do I go about investigating this? Well, my computer is my primary tool belt, and so I go about doing this with a mathematical model. So I think this might be the simplest model I've ever generated. So we developed a very simple model, which you could even just describe as a mathematical function, where drug failure results from these three possible sources. First, some proportion of patients just will not fill their prescription, so the 1 minus alpha. Second, among those who do get their prescription, some proportion will not adhere to treatment, the 1 minus beta. And finally, among those who do get their prescription and do adhere to treatment, there's still the possibility of failure, of efficacy failure, we'll call that. And so I won't dwell on it, but we do some fancy algebra, and this simplifies to this really nice, very simple equation. So to estimate the cost of using each drug, we used a related mathematical function where we take into account drug costs on the left and the cost related to adverse events, which for the purpose of this exercise, let's just limit to pelvic inflammatory disease. And so note that in this equation that PID results, it can result both from successful treatment and failure treatment, but it's much more likely from a failed treatment. And so moving to the real results. So we used two approaches to answer this question. On the left, you can see how we did this numerically by solving for the value of doxy adherence necessary to achieve equivalent effectiveness. And on the right, you can see the result of simulation, where we varied doxycycline adherence on the x-axis while holding constant all other parameters so that to compare the effectiveness of each drug across levels of doxy adherence. And so what you see here is azithro failure in blue is flat because it does not depend on doxy adherence. So this makes sense. While doxy failure in red goes down as adherence goes up, as adherence improves. And so where these two lines intersect, where they cross, is where they have equivalent effectiveness. In this case, using the older efficacy values, this requires an 82% adherence to doxycycline in order to achieve equal effectiveness. And using the newer efficacy values from the Geisler study, we found a much higher, and that study had the higher azithro efficacy. This results in much higher doxy adherence necessary in order to achieve equivalent effectiveness. So roughly 97% adherence is necessary to achieve equivalent effectiveness. And when we perform a similar analysis for cost, again, you can see the numerical relationship on the left, and it's a little bit more complicated now, but on the right, we see a very similar relationship, that the points of equivalence are largely unchanged, both assuming the old efficacy estimates shown here, so 82% adherence for equivalent cost, and here with the newer efficacy estimates, it's now 98% where the two lines intersect. And so, and here are these figures back to back, just to show you that with effectiveness in terms of a failure on the left and cost on the right, you can see that the lines intersect at nearly the same level of doxy adherence. And this occurs because the difference in drug cost, which is less than $5 apart now, that difference is much less than the cost related to PID here, which we assume is roughly $3,500. So fairly high adherence to doxy is necessary in order for it to be as effective and as cost-effective as azithro. So this seems to tip the scales heavily in favor of azithro. And so what if you don't like this worldview? What might be a feature of our simple mathematical model that we're ignoring? And maybe one place to start is with partial adherence to doxy. So maybe you only take half the course. Specifically, let's define a very specific scenario where what if 50% of those who did not adhere perfectly to doxy, they adhered well enough to get 80% drug efficacy? And so when we ran this very specific scenario, the importance depended upon the efficacy values we used. So using the older efficacy values, there was quite a bit of a difference. So the doxy adherence necessary for equivalence went from 83% to only 70%, which is still very high, but it's not 90%. And but using the newer efficacy values from Geisler, the point of equivalence shifted in from 98% to only 97%. So it didn't make any difference at all, even when we accounted for partial adherence. So putting this all together, because azithro and doxy have similar costs and similar efficacy, and most importantly, because azithro is much easier to adhere to, I believe that there's substantial evidence favoring the treatment of urogenital chlamydia in women with azithro rather than doxy. And another way of saying that is that we find it unlikely that real-world doxy adherence will be high enough to achieve equivalent effectiveness and cost-effectiveness as azithro. A few potential limitations. First, we modeled partial adherence in a fairly simple manner, but if we had the data corresponding to each number of pills taken, we could model it that way. I doubt it would make much of a difference. Second, our simulations throughout assumed that azithro adherence was 100%. Again, we can vary that, but I think it's going to be pretty close to 100% among those who do fill their prescriptions. And so, finally, our perspective is limited in that we ignored secondary transmission. For the purpose for here, it may not make much of a difference, but for public health impact, you might actually care about secondary transmission. And finally, we didn't account for the potential effects related to cross efficacies of these drugs for treating co-infections. And so I want to end by asking you a question. So why should we still treat chlamydia with doxy? Most importantly is the first bullet, I believe. If future studies show lower efficacy of azithro, if they're not able to corroborate what Geisler found recently, or if there are really much lower efficacy values either in certain circumstances, so in other anatomical sites or whatever. Second, there's the potential for emergence of azithromycin-resistant chlamydia, I'm told. There's no resistance now, but this is a potential future problem. And this would effectively lower azithro's drug efficacy. Third, adherence problems. It is a large pill, I guess. So if people do have problems taking pills, I'm not a clinician, but I'm sure the clinicians can speak to that. And another issue is if there's cross-reactivity with other bugs. So I'll leave it there and see what you all think.
Questions or comments for Dr. Spicknall?
Patty Kissinger, is this on?
Yeah.
So thank you so much for a really great talk. We just published, actually with Dr. Schwebke and Dr. Manhart, we took our studies and reanalyzed them because some of the problem with the repeat infection rate that was so high is because they were testing with nucleic acid amplification technique too early, and they were picking up remnant DNA. So once we standardized that and harmonized the three studies, and we just published this in SVD, it's out, I think, today or yesterday. So anyway, it's a 10% rate of azithromycin.
Failure rate.
So that's after adjusting for the potential that they might have been re-exposed or whatever. So how do you think that would affect your model?
It's fairly close to the Geisler estimates then. I mean, so it's...
His
was 97, and so that's 90%. I mean, so it's going to be in between, and it's okay. But it's, yeah, I mean, that's great to kind of show the higher value.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Here comes Hunter.
Quaking in my boots.
Yeah, it's okay.
He doesn't bite.
Nice presentation, but I would, you asked, so why still consider doxy up there? Number one, although I think your compliance was sort of assuming, the straight line was assuming they either take none or they take it all, and then you went to this more dynamic sort of thing. But the shape of that dynamic curve isn't really known. But Walt Stamm used to say, and he wrote in a paper that I think was co-authored with Mary Guinan, who some of the more senior CDC folks will recall fondly, that however much doxy they take, it works. So there was the assumption and belief back when azithromycin didn't exist and you had to use doxycycline that we just didn't see chlamydia failures. I mean, and that's an ecological soft observation that was never systematically studied, and it was culture days and not NAT days. Mm-hmm. But whatever amount of doxy people take, they seems to work. And the shape of that curve probably is that you have no decrement in efficacy for the first two or three or four doses out of 14, and it may even be quite good at 50%. So the other thing is we just don't know yet about the rectum, and particularly in women and men having sex with men, in terms of how that's going to all pan out, particularly in view of Roger Rank's belief based on the model animal modeling that there's a reason to worry about a GI reservoir that wouldn't be right. And then finally, just individualization. I get and I believe that when all these issues are ultimately shaken out in the box, that there will still be a very important role for single-dose therapy, because we're always going to have some patients who clearly are not going to be compliant. Right. On the other hand, I think sometimes we as a specialty are guilty of assuming the importance of single-dose therapy from a somewhat prejudicial standpoint. If you have an STD, or if you're someone who visits an STD clinic, you are, by definition, a non-compliant reprobate. And I think there is more room for judgment on who will probably take most of their drug than sometimes we give them credit for. And so I just keep it. I just wouldn't toss the doxycycline baby out yet.
Yep.
Understood.
And I think appropriately the last word from Will Geisler himself.
I will be brief. I will just say that I agree that the rectal, we just don't know. There haven't been good studies yet, okay. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
But I will say there is data about doxy and treatment failure, and I'll point out, I think Laura Bachman arguably had the best study where they used the MIMS caps, basically, and they showed that when you basically take less than 10 doses, the failure rate's about 20% with doxycycline.
Yeah.
And there was another retrospective study that only looked at if you missed one or more, and it was a very similar, about 20% in that study. But that one didn't tease out the different doses. So I think if you miss some doxy, yeah, you're going to have a higher failure rate. So I don't think we can blow that off. And so I think at this point, you should be taking azithromycin. So.
All right. Okay, the case is closed.